This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Our show this week begins with Richard Diamond, private detective, in his episode from June 19, 1949, titled The Fred Sears Murder Case. After that, it's Nick Carter, master detective, and an angle on murder, his story from October 25th,
1943. Here's Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Hello there. My name's Diamond, and I'm known along the big street as a guy who manages to keep his nose pretty clean and still make a few bucks while I'm doing it. Oh, sure, it gets a little grimy, but you've got to expect that. I'm a shamus, private eye, gumshoe. To the guy who hasn't ever been worried because he tripped over a corpse in his breakfast nook, I'm known as a private detective. And to some guys, I'm known by a lot of other names. Not the kind you'd find in a book on manners and social usages. But there are times when you might turn up on your desk calendar under the heading of what I must do today. Who hires me? How do I make a living? Well, maybe this will give you an idea.
Fred, why don't you eat your toast? It's getting cold.
Why don't you stop worrying about the temperature of my breakfast? I'm trying to read the paper.
Did anyone ever tell you how charming it is to have breakfast with you every morning?
Yeah. My ulcers.
I'd like to go shopping today. Will you leave me some money? Fred, did you hear me?
Mary, I'm reading.
Well, stop reading and listen to me for a minute. I need some new summer clothes and I want to go shopping today.
Yeah. Here's $10. Buy yourself a bathing suit.
Oh, that's very funny.
Hmm?
I need more than $10. I want $500.
What kind of a bathing suit are you going to buy, Mink?
I'm not going to buy a bathing suit. I need some new clothes. Will you put down that paper and listen to me?
Well, I see you made Jimmy Cello's column again, my darling.
What?
What prominent socialite is fighting with her wealthy husband and crying on the shoulder of a big-time playboy after the arguments?
Is that supposed to be me?
Can you remember 5 minutes in the past 5 years when we haven't been fighting?
Are you accusing me of running around with some playboy?
Running around is right. I expect one of you to be the first to do a four-minute mile.
How dare you?
How dare me? Why, you lushed-up little tramp.
Tramp?
Yeah, tramp. Everybody in town knows you're seeing Lorne Oliver.
All right, so I've been seeing him. We're just friends.
Well, that kind of friendship is grounds for divorce in this state.
Why, you dirty...
Shut up. I'm sick of this whole rotten mess. And I'm going to do something about it.
You're going to do something about it? Why, you conceited, pompous... You're going to do something, are you? Well, you better hurry up because I've got some ideas of my own.
Yeah?
Lorne.
Yeah, you're married?
I've got to talk to you.
What time is it?
10 o'clock.
Well, it's still the middle of the night. Call me back
this
later.
This can't wait. Fred found an item about us in Jimmy Cello's column this morning. He stormed out of here like he was going to kill somebody.
Well, you're just the gal who could recognize the symptoms.
Well, that's a nasty line.
What do you want at 10 in the morning, Longfellow? Look, honey, I'll take care of Cello, and if that husband of yours gets out of line, I'll take care of him, too.
You see what I mean? If things like that didn't happen, I'd be out of business. I'll lay you 8 to 5 that before 3 o'clock this afternoon, one of those charming people will be walking into my office begging for help. Yeah?
Rick?
Oh, hello, Helen, baby.
Hi. You gonna take me out tonight?
Sure. I'll be over later. We'll have a quiet evening.
No, I want to go dancing tonight. If you don't take me, I'll throw a tantrum.
But, baby, I don't have the cash. I'm tapped this week.
Let me take you. Borrow it from Francis. You told me yourself he was good in a pinch.
Yeah, but he's already black and blue from those 3 lunches at Lindy's. Besides, he's not only your butler, but he's a darn good businessman. He wants security.
Well, give it to him.
He's already got my badge, my book on the 10 best ways to sneak through transoms, complete with illustrations, and my gun.
Haven't you got something else?
Yeah, but I'm saving the right eye in case of an emergency. Keyholes, you know. Look, honey, let's go take in a quiet movie.
I want to get dressed. up and go to a nightclub. It's summer. The flowers are blooming and the fox has left his lair.
His what?
Oh, I've been hibernating all winter and I want to get out into some nice, smoke-filled dance floor.
Why, Helen.
Why, Helen, nothing. Please, Rick.
Oh, hold it. Someone's knocking at my chamber door. Come in.
Mr. Diamond?
Yeah, pull up a chair. I'll be right with you.
Who is it?
I'm afraid to look. I haven't paid the light bill.
This is the detective agency, isn't it?
You, sir, have just won yourself a new economy home-size murder sampler, complete with a matching set of bodies.
Me?
No.
I haven't got time to listen to your bright remarks, Diamond. I want to hire you.
What did he say?
He doesn't like my bright remarks. You won't even admit they're bright.
What else?
No, something about wanting to,
Something about what?
What was that last statement, sir? It sounded rather cozy.
I said I wanted to hire you.
What?
I'll call you later, baby. Bye.
Wait a minute.
Now, Mr.,
Sears.
Mr. Sears, what can I do for you?
I want you to follow my wife.
Will I like the view?
She's running around with another man.
Well, if they're just running around, don't worry about it. It's when they get tired and slow down that things start to pop.
There was a veiled article in Jimmy Cello's column this morning about my wife and this man.
Yeah, I know Cello.
So do I, but I'm not interested in Cello at the moment.
Well, what do you want? Enough on your wife so you can get a divorce?
Yes.
Oh, well, that comes kind of high. I don't like cases like this, and I usually turn them down. If you want me to swallow my pride, it'll take a $200 retainer and $100 a day in expenses.
I'll write you a check.
Oh, just like that, huh?
I am quite wealthy. Hmm. That's why I want the divorce, Mr. Diamond. There you are.
Yes, sir. There I am. Now, what's the man's name that your wife is seeing?
His name is Lorne Oliver.
Well, this is turning into a family gathering.
You know him?
Sure, runs the Monarch Club.
That's right.
What's your wife's name, and we're going to get a look at her?
Mary Sears. You can see her tonight at the Stork. We'll be there for dinner, 9 o'clock.
I'll be there. Oh, incidentally, that comes under the heading of expenses, in case you have a short memory.
I have a good memory, Mr. Diamond. You can send me the bill.
Oh. Address and phone number?
45 East 65th Street.
45 East 65.
Evergreen 41793.
41793.
Now I've got to be going. Goodbye, Mr. Diamond.
Goodbye, Mr. Sears. Yeah?
What'd you hang up on me for?
Honey, this is because you always give me an argument. You never want to go anywhere. I'm getting tired of shows and hot dogs. I want to go dancing.
What?
And I don't mean Roseland. I want to go to the Stork. I'm a growing boy, and I like to see the bright lights and throw my money around.
But, Rick, you said...
I'll pick you up at 8:30, and this time, don't wear slacks.
You're an idiot.
Bye, idiot. Yes, that's the way it goes, just as I told you. The word private in front of detective means you're married to all the troubles in the world, and that includes everything. So if a guy turns up who's unhappy with his wife, you listen to him howl, and if he's got enough money, you take the job. It's for better or for worse. And until Mr. Sears came in, it was decidedly one-sided. I'd teach cooking to a bunch of headhunters for a fee like the one he'd given me. When I looked at his $200 check, I started getting that big man complex again. So I closed the office and went back to my flat. We'd probably be up late, and Helen always had some extracurricular activities after we'd get back to her place. You know, roasting marshmallows, fast game of canasta, or an exciting round of Emmys on the living room rug. Anyway, I always got home pretty late in the a.m., so I spent the rest of the afternoon taking a nap. At 6 o'clock, I got up and dressed, and at 8:30, I picked up Helen. Wow. And at 9 o'clock, we were sitting at the Stark Club bar, right on schedule.
Rick, when are you going to ask for a table?
Well, honey, the drinks come faster here.
But I want to dance.
Oh, now. Mustn't overdo it, lover.
No.
How do you know? Maybe some mountain climber will ask you on a 20-mile hike tomorrow. Think of your feet.
I am. I want to move them around that dance floor. Oh, Rick, I know you. You do something, you do it all the way.
Yeah, let's nick.
Oh, now you stop that. You're on a job, and you don't want to go in there because you've got to watch somebody.
Well, Helen Asher, how are you, darling?
Well, hello, Lauren, how have you been?
Oh, couldn't be better. Why don't you ever stop over to my club? I'd like to show you around.
She just brought a seeing eye dog.
Oh, hello, Diamond.
You two know each other, don't you?
Yes. How did we make such a grisly mistake, Oliver?
I don't know. I tried taking penicillin for it, but it didn't do much good.
Well, it probably helped out in the other things. Why don't you try hanging yourself?
Rick.
You always did think you were a pretty funny man, didn't you, Diamond?
It's easy being a comic. You just find an idiot for an audience. How do you like the performance?
Stinks. Pardon me, Helen, but I see some people I know. You'll excuse me, won't you, Diamond?
Oh, sure, yes. But the next time you drop around, bring some Airwick, huh?
Rick, even if you don't like him, you shouldn't say those things. He's liable to start a fight.
Oh, he wouldn't take a swing at a midget if he was riding an elephant.
I wonder who his friends are. They don't seem to be too glad to see him.
Their name's Sears.
Is that who you're watching?
Yeah, the wife.
I don't know whether I approve or not. She's very attractive.
Isn't she, though?
Rick!
This is business, baby, business. I'm only drooling because I haven't had anything to eat since this morning.
Well, then let's get a table. You've seen her. You've observed what she's doing. Now let's get something to eat.
Now, wait a minute. Here comes somebody else I know.
Hello, where?
Standing at the check room.
The little man?
Yeah, here he comes.
Who is he?
Name's Cello, oh. Jimmy Cello. Writes a gossip column.
I read it all the time.
Yeah? Hello, Jimmy.
Well, the Broadway shamus. Who's the lovely redhead, Diamond?
Helen, meet James Cello, but be careful what you say. Jimmy, Helen Asher.
Hello, Mr. Cello.
How do you do? Is this an item, Rick?
If I don't get us a table soon, she's going to make me give back her sorority pin.
Oh, speaking of tables, I see some people I know. Nice meeting you, Miss Asher.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Diamond.
Bye, Jimmy.
Rick, he's going over to see his table.
Hello, Walter. Hi, doll. Hi. Well, good evening.
What do you want, Cello?
Oh, I just dropped by to see how the happy little family was getting along.
Well, just drop away. Nobody asked you to stop by.
Yeah, why don't you do that and take Oliver here with you? Nobody asked him to stop by
Fred,
either.
Fred, keep your voice down.
This is my table, and I don't like a lot of crumbs lying all over it.
Who's a crumb?
Come on, Lorne. I guess Mr. Sears has forgotten a few things.
I haven't forgotten a thing, Cello. When you print one thing in that lying sheet of yours, and I'll have you sued for life.
Listen, Sears, if I did print anything, they'd put you away so far they'd have to pipe air into you.
Oh, do go on, Mr. Cello. This is getting interesting.
You'd better get out of here, Cello.
No. Go on, Cello. What have you got on old money bag?
He's a lying, dirty gossip monger. He doesn't have a thing.
Wait a minute. I don't like that. Why don't you ask your husband about North Africa sometime, Mrs. Sears?
Just a minute.
Fred, stop it. Fred.
All right, now pick yourself up and get out of here, Cello.
Maybe you're right. I've got a column to get out. It'll be all about you, Sears, in big type.
Go on, get out.
How about me? Gonna throw me out, too?
You can bet your life I am.
I'm getting out of here.
You stay right where you are.
Don't talk that way to Mary.
I'll talk any way I like to my wife.
Lorne, maybe you'd better leave. Here come the waiters.
Nuts, I'm gonna push this fat slob's face in.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Lorne, don't.
All right. Come on, break it up. Come on. Hey, waiter, give me a hand.
Take your hands off me, Diamond.
Now, calm down, Mr. Sears.
I'll kill that slob.
Oliver, you shut up or I'll pull your pants up over your head and shove you in a glass like a breadstick.
I don't like people meddling in my affairs, Diamond. You're a fire.
I'm what?
You heard me. Now take your filthy hands off me.
Ah, well, you were lily white before I palmed that check of yours this morning. You can have it back. Here, eat it.
What? I'll have you in jail for this, Diamond.
Why, it isn't every day you get to eat a $200 check.
Oh, Rick, let's get out of here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, baby, but that's what happens when you go to work for a hyena like Sears. You think he's a nice guy because he laughs so much. But you find out later it's only because he chewed your leg off. We left Sears still spitting out pieces of the check I'd shoved down his throat and headed for Helen's apartment. I was sore. When I get hot under the collar, I don't make for good company. So I dropped her off with a kiss and went back to my flat and climbed in the sack. I smoked a dozen cigarettes before I got to sleep. And when I finally did, it must have been with a big smile on my face. All night, I kept dreaming that Lorne Oliver and Fred Sears were beating themselves to death with hot paper sacks. Yeah. No, this is Sunshine Market. Lock's popovers are specialty.
Now, you stop clowning and get over here right away.
Walt?
Lieutenant Levinson.
Oh, wow.
Where are you?
I'm in your office.
Yeah? Well, if any clients come in, give them a good sales talk.
Tell them how many people you've killed or something.
There's a guy in your office now.
Prospect?
Depends on what you're talking about. I think his name is Fritz Sears.
Tell him to go home. He canned me last night.
I don't think he'll listen.
All right. So he's sore.
He's got a right to be. He's dead.
Stop acting like an idiot, Walt. You know I didn't have anything to do with it.
I know you didn't, but we find the stiff in your office and we get a report that he fired you last night, but you had a fight with him. I gotta tell the commissioner something, Rick.
Tell him Sergeant Otis is teething.
Now, you stop that.
Now, what do you know about the killing?
The coroner just left. He said that Sears had been dead about 8 hours. The cleaning woman found him at 9 this morning and called us.
That puts the time of the murder around 1 a.m.
We found this, clenched in the dead man's hands.
What is it?
An article torn out of the morning papers. Here, read it.
Ah, Jimmy Cello's column.
Read it.
All right, I will. Don't yell at me. Ah, Fred Sears, wealthy import-export man, is having troubles. He's finding it hard to explain about his past doings in North Africa, and at the same time, he's finding it just as hard to explain his wife's interest in the local playboy, nightclub owner Lauren Oliver.
Yeah.
He got so mad at the Stark Club... Oh, I was there. He got so mad at the Stark Club last night that he took a poke at your columnist and then tried to beat up Lauren Oliver. Will this lead to a rematch between Oliver and Sears?
We're having a whole bunch of them picked up.
Walt, before you do that, give me a couple of hours, will you? Try to dig up the killer?
I can't. You know what we've got to do. It's routine.
Well, the commissioner's already having fits every time he hears my name.
Now, look, Rick.
Walt, I got a business to protect. And if he finds out the stiff was killed in my office, he'll probably haul in my license.
Yeah. 1 hour, Rick. That's all I can give you. I got a job, too.
Ah, thanks, Walt.
I suppose you've got an alibi for 1 o'clock?
Call Helen. We were toasting marshmallows. Well, I had 3 good suspects. Lauren Oliver, Cello, the columnist, and Mrs. Sears. One of the 3 was built just right for the electric chair. An hour isn't much time to dig up a killer, so I grabbed a cab and headed for Lauren Oliver's office in the back of his club.
Yeah, come in.
How are you, Oliver?
Oh, what do you want, Diamond? Not particular about who comes into my club.
Oh, I'm surprised you can operate with that kind of policy. People probably see you in here every night.
I think I'll have you thrown out.
Where were you at 1 o'clock this morning?
None of your business. Herman.
Yeah, boss?
Come in here and show a guy out of my office.
Oh, we get rough, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll let you tell the cops who knocked off Fred Sears.
Hey, this the guy, boss?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Did you say someone knocked off Fred Sears?
That's right, but don't start crying about it. It makes me feel so helpless.
I'll tell my story to the cops.
They'll get a lot tougher than I will.
You won't get tough at all, Mac.
Oh, stop flexing, Herman. You'll snap your girdle.
Well, I guess it doesn't make much difference as long as Sears is dead. I was with his wife from about 12 o'clock to it was a long time after 1.
Well, where were you all that time?
At my place. And I'll take a walk, Shamus. You got my alibi.
One more question. Did you go out at all?
Yeah, I went out and got the late papers. So what? I like to read.
Okay. You don't mind if I stop by and see Mrs. Sears, do you?
No, go ahead.
I'll see you later. Oh, Herman.
Yeah?
You can let the air out now. Your muscles are lovely. Well, Oliver had a good story if it checked, so that left me with 2 more stops. Cello's newspaper office was the closest, so I grabbed another cab, and 10 minutes later, I was sitting at his desk.
Oh, you don't think I had anything to do with it, do you, Diamond?
Wherever you had 1 this morning?
I was covering a party at Richard Gray's. I was with friends from about 11 o'clock till after 3. You can check. Go on, check.
Look, Poison Pen, Sears had your column from the late edition clenched in his hand.
He did, huh? Well, you don't think if I was going to kill a man, I'd leave anything like that around?
I don't know.
Well, obviously, someone is trying to make it look like I did it. Have you talked with Oliver and Sears' wife?
Oliver's got an alibi, and I'm headed for Mrs. Sears' place right now. You know the address?
Yes. 45 East 65th. But Mrs. Sears couldn't kill her husband. I know her too well.
No? Well, thanks, Cello. I'll check your alibi. If it stands up, then I'll have to really go to work on Mrs. Sears.
Yes?
Mrs. Sears?
Yes.
Oh, you look even better up close.
What's on your mind?
You mean right this minute?
Well, aren't you nice? Don't crowd me, though. I can keep up a pretty good average in this league.
I'd say about 1,000. Mm-hmm. May I come in?
I think so, if you keep talking. I like to hear nice things.
Well, you deserve them. But I can think of some nice things to say about a panther.
We'll talk about my family some other time. Can I buy you a drink?
It's a little early, unless you got some milk.
Milk?
Where's your husband?
Oh, you know about him, huh? Oh, I'm sorry. This looked as though it might work into quite a friendship.
Where is he?
I haven't seen him since last night. Why? A friend of yours?
He's been using my office.
Oh?
Yeah. He died there last night.
What?
Everybody is so surprised.
But how? Who did it?
That's what I'm trying to find out, lover. Where were you at 1 a.m.?
That's none of your business.
Okay, let the law drag it out of you. Goodbye, dear.
Wait a minute. All right, I'll tell you. I was with a man named Oliver, Lorne Oliver.
Oh, for how long?
From about 12 o'clock to... well, much later.
That's what Oliver says. Did you go out at all?
Just to get the papers.
That checks with Oliver's story, too. Did you go out alone?
Why, No, I went with Lorne.
He says he went out alone.
Oh, well, yes, he did.
I thought you said you went out with him.
Well, that was later. Lorne was the one that went out to get the papers.
Okay, what time is it?
About 2.
When you both went out or when Lorne went out to get the papers by himself?
When Lorne went out.
Oh, yes, now I see. Well, I'll see you later.
Come back again.
Oh, I'll do that after you get over crying for your late husband.
I'll keep my emotions down to a minimum.
I'll bet you will. I left her standing in the middle of the room, looking after me like a vegetarian with an eye on a green salad. I closed the door and started down the hall for the elevators. For some reason, I never seem to get where I'm going.
Hello.
Hmm?
Oh. Now, while you're still tuned in, Diamond, I'll give you some advice. Stay away from Mrs. Sears. Now I want you to be sure and get the point. Rick, come on, snap out of it.
I'll go away.
Come on, you don't look so good.
It matches the way I feel. Oh, here's a new line. Where am I, Walt?
In Mrs. Sears' apartment.
Hello, handsome.
She heard the scuffle in the hall, came out, found you, and called me.
Swell.
Who did it?
I didn't see him, but his voice sounded like a thug that Lorne Oliver keeps around a patty cake with.
Oh, that was probably Herman. Lorne is so jealous.
Well, your hour is up, and now I'm going to haul them all in, including this Herman.
Oh, do you know Herman, Walt?
Sure, Herman Sharp. Got a record a mile long.
Walt, if a guy wanted to hire a killer, where would he go?
You know all the stoolies as well as I do.
Yeah. Mrs. Sears, what was the fight about last night at the Stork?
Oh, a columnist named Cello threatened my husband that he was going to print something in his paper. He said something about North Africa, and Fred hit him.
North Africa? This is really getting mixed up. Was your husband ever in North Africa?
Yes, during the war. He was a captain in the army.
Walt, can you get me this Herman Sharp's address? He's the boy I want.
Sure, but I'm coming along.
Have your boys pick up Cello, Oliver, and take them both down to the station along with Mrs. Sears here.
Well, you don't think I had anything to do with it, do you?
I've known Jimmy Cello a long time. About 5 years ago, he used to run around with a little dancer named Mary Carroll.
Sure he did. I'm Mary Carroll, but I broke up with him when I met Fred.
Yeah. Well, you'll see him at the station. You can pick up where you left off. Come on, Walt. We went down fast and climbed into the prowl car. Walt put in a call and got Herman's address over the two-way radio. 20 minutes later, we were standing in front of Herman's door. It was an old apartment house on the Lower East Side. I started for the door, but Walt had other ideas.
Rick, we can't go in there.
Why not?
Because I haven't got a search warrant.
Well, you got to go in if you want to crack this case.
Not without a search warrant.
Search warrant for what?
To go in.
What do you want to go in for?
I don't want to go in. You do.
Do what?
Go in.
Well, go ahead.
I haven't got a warrant.
What are you looking for?
Herman Sharp.
He's probably in there.
He is?
Sure.
Well, what are we waiting for? Oh, what did I do that for?
For that.
What?
Herman Sharp.
Oh.
Is he dead?
Yeah, been shot. What are you looking at?
Newspaper on the floor. This morning's. Huh. Cello's column's missing. Been torn out.
Then Herman's your killer.
Swell. Who killed Herman?
Don't you know?
I'm not going to start that again. Walt, go on back to the station. I'm going to check something and make a phone call. I'll be down in half an hour and point out your killer.
Now, calm down. Calm down, everybody.
This is ridiculous. I want my lawyer.
You'll get one later.
Relax, Oliver. They can't hold it much longer. How do you feel, Mary?
I don't like this any more than you do.
Well, good afternoon, and happy Father's Day.
Oh. Rick, where the devil have you been?
Made a phone call to Washington, Walt. Mrs. Sears, did you know that your husband had a dishonorable discharge from the Army?
Why, no.
You knew it, didn't you, Cello?
That's right, but I kept it quiet. He got it for running a black market.
What's this got to do with the death of Sears?
Oliver, you told me you went out to get the papers last night.
That's right.
What time was it?
A little after 2. You know what time the late edition comes out.
How about you, Mrs. Sears?
What Lorne says is correct.
How about it, Lorne? Were you the one to go out and get the papers?
Yes.
Then, Mrs. Sears, why did you tell me this afternoon that you also went out to get the papers?
Well, I...
Mary, don't say anything.
You don't have to. The stories don't check, so you couldn't have been together last night.
Look, Diamond, what is this...
Oh, now you look, Oliver. You're both liars. But that doesn't make either one of you the killer.
Oh, but Rick, Cello's alibi checks right down the line.
Sure it does, because he was at that party. But the killer wasn't.
Oh, we know that. He couldn't have been.
Yeah, but the man who hired the killer to knock off Sears was.
What are you talking about, Diamond?
Oliver, where was your hired gun if last night?
You mean Herman?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. He was with me until 6 o'clock, then he left.
Walt, when you find Herman's gun, ballistics will probably say that it was the one that did the job on Sears.
Herman?
Yeah. Cello, you hired Herman to kill Sears, and then you killed Herman.
You're out of your mind. I didn't even know this Herman.
We found the newspaper next to Herman's body. It had your column torn out of it.
That doesn't pin anything on me. It just shows you that Herman probably stuck that article in Sears' hand after tearing it out of a newspaper.
That's what you wanted to make it look like. You knew Herman. You knew about the clipping, so you killed him and tore the column out of this morning's newspaper.
Of course I knew about the clipping. You told me about it this morning in my office.
That's right. But you were the only one I told about it.
You couldn't convict Jack the Ripper on that kind of evidence.
I'm afraid he's right, Rick.
Cello, what time does the late edition come out?
About 2 o'clock.
Walt, what time was Sears killed?
Around 1.
Say.
Yeah. The killer couldn't have gotten hold of that column at 1 o'clock. The papers weren't even out on the street.
Well, then how did he do it?
Only one man could have gotten that column before 1 a.m., the man who wrote it.
Jimmy.
He tore it out of the galley sheets. The proofs that are made up before the paper goes to press. Cello hired Herman, gave him the clippings, and then went to the party.
Oh, you're doing great, Diamond. Keep it up.
You're still in love with Mary Sears. You were jealous of Oliver, so you hired Oliver's boy, Herman, figuring the cops would pin Sears' murder on Oliver. How am I doing?
You're a good liar and a rotten detective.
You knew I'd go to see Mary Sears, so you sent Herman to beat me up and make it look like Oliver was behind it. What? You tried to frame Oliver all along the line.
Why, you cheap little scandal snooper. I'll fix it so you don't frame anybody.
Wait a minute.
All right, break it up. Come on. Break it down. Break it up.
Hey, Walt.
What is it, Rick?
Bye.
Good evening, Mr. Diamond.
Evening, Francis. Miss Asherin?
Yes, sir. She's in the library. She's a little tired from last night. I think she's taking a nap.
Well, I'll walk on my tippy toes. How about a glass of warm milk, Francis? I'm a little tired, too.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
Well, look at the little baby.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, her's in dreamland. Poor little tired baby. The evening breeze caressed the trees tenderly.
Oh, Rick.
The trembling trees embraced the breeze tenderly. Hello, baby.
Don't stop.
All right. Close your pretty eyes. Then you and I came wandering by.
Oh. Wonderful.
And lost in a sigh were we.
Ricky.
The shore was kissed by sea and mist tenderly.
Ricky.
I can't forget how two hearts met breathlessly.
Ricky, come here.
Your arms opened wide and closed me inside.
Ricky, come here.
What is it, dear?
Just this.
Here's your milk, mister. Oh, my goodness. Now, this time I refuse to blush.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Hi Averback, Joan Banks, Parley Bear, and Sidney Miller. Music was under the direction of David Baskerville. Richard Diamond is written by Blake Edwards and directed by William P. Rousseau. Now this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week, when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. This program has come to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
What's the matter?
Carter, what is it?
Another case for Nick Carter, master detective.
Yes, it's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective. Tonight's curious adventure...
An Angle on Murder, for Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Mutilated Bullet.
Then I grabbed her, and I wound my fingers around her throat. And I squeezed her windpipe tight. Tighter and tighter.
What's the matter, Patsy?
Oh, Nick, put the lights on.
All right.
And I said I wanted to hear the recorded confession you made of that mad murderer who killed his wife. I didn't think I'd have to listen to it in the dark.
Well, that's the way we got him to confess in the first place. Oh, I'll take it, Patsy.
Okay, Nick.
Nick Carter's office.
I'd like to talk to Mr. Nicholas Carter.
This is Nick Carter speaking.
Oh, hello, Nick. This is John Hamill, the banker's associates.
Oh, hello, John. How've you been?
Nick, I'm in trouble. I can't discuss it over the phone. How soon can you meet me?
Where?
On West Street, around the corner from the Greystone building where my offices are. Please get there as fast as you can.
All right, John. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Now, Scubby, you understand exactly what you're to do?
Yeah, Nick.
Okay, I'll see you later. I've got a date in this corner.
Okay, Nick. I'll be seeing you.
Hey, look at that car coming up the street, would you?
Hey, Nick, watch out. That car is headed right at you. Jump, Nick.
Oh, did he hit you, Nick? Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Oh, gee, that was close. It almost seemed like whoever was driving that car did that on purpose.
Wouldn't be at all surprised, Scubby. I think somebody is interested in preventing me from keeping my appointment.
Hey, look, maybe I better stay with you, Nick.
No, I've got something else for you to do, Scubby. I got the number in that car. Hop down to the license bureau and find out who it belongs to. Then wait for me at the office.
Oh, Nick. Sorry I'm so late.
Oh, hello, John. I've been on this corner waiting for you for 20 minutes. Where have you been?
Trying to get here without anyone seeing me.
Well, why all the mystery? What's up?
Wait a minute, Nick. Here, get back in this doorway, quick. Don't let him see us.
Well, who was that? Somebody trailing you?
I don't know. I never saw him before.
Well, then why'd you want to dodge him? You haven't done anything wrong, have you?
No, Nick. Absolutely nothing. Now listen, I don't want the police in on this just yet, if I can help it. A banking firm like mine can't stand any unnecessary notoriety.
Well, yes, I know, John, but what's this all about?
Well, let me explain. I wanted to tell you out here where I can be sure no one will hear us. You see, Nick, several days ago, I discovered there's a serious shortage on our books. Somebody has been taking money from the accounts, and I'm almost sure I know who it is. I've called a meeting of my four partners. They're upstairs in my office waiting for me right now to have a showdown before the stockholders find out. That's why I ask you to come over here, Nick. You may have to make an arrest tonight.
Well, you don't want a detective, John. You want a cop.
No, 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 you're wrong, Nick. I want you. Please come along.
Well, perhaps you better wait down the lobby while I go up and see if everything's all right. That is safe for you to come.
No, no, Nick. There's no need for that.
All right.
I want to be in on the showdown. Come on.
Anything you say. And if you really feel that something dangerous is in the wind, I think I should go up there first and look around. Then if everything's okay, let you know.
No, no. I want to go up now and get it over with.
Well, you insist.
I do, Nick. Oh, I know it's pretty late, but I waited purposely till the offices were closed to avoid any publicity. This whole business requires the greatest secrecy.
Fourth floor.
Oh, this is our floor, Nick.
After you, John.
Oh, thank you.
Kind of dark in this hallway, isn't it?
Yes, the lighting isn't any too good here, but I...
John. John. John, are you hurt bad?
Nick.
Nick.
What's happened?
Why is John?
Quiet, please, quiet. Gentlemen, John Hamill is dead.
John Hamill is dead, but that's terrible, terrible. How did it happen?
That's what I want to know. You seem to know him. Who are you?
Well, I could ask you the same question. Who are you?
I'm Nick Carter.
Nick Carter, the detective?
Yes.
Oh, well, my name's Tom Burdick. I'm one of Hamill's partners, and these are the others.
Mr. Carter,
I'm Emil Garrick, and this is Arthur Nelson and Alan Cornish.
How do you do, Mr. Carter?
You're Cornish, huh?
Yes, Mr. Carter.
What do you know about this?
Nothing. I was in my office all the time.
No, that's not true, Cornish. I saw you go out in the hall just a few seconds before Hamill was shot.
That right, Cornish?
Yes, I did go out for a moment. But when the shot was fired, I was back in my office. But why question me? Why don't you ask Burdick where he was or Nelson or Garrick?
Well, I can easily explain where Mr. Nelson and I were. We were both together in my office preparing some papers for tonight's meeting.
That's right, Mr. Carter. I was with Mr. Garrick.
Which of you men belong to which office?
Well, you can see the layout yourself, Mr. Carter. They all open off this L-shaped corridor. First comes Nelson's office, then Burdick's. There, on the long leg of the L. Then on the corner at the end is Cornish's office, directly in line with the corridor to the elevator.
And Garrick's office is around the corner on the short leg of the L.
That's right.
That's out of sight of the elevator completely, isn't it?
Sure, you can't even see the corridor from my office.
So I see. Then, Cornish, your office is the only one which faces the corridor. I'd like to have a look at it.
All right. This way. This is my office, Mr. Carter.
Peculiar order, yeah? Let's see. Well, what have we here in this umbrella stand? A gun.
What?
And it's been fired very recently. I should say, gentlemen, this was the murder weapon.
That's Mr. Cornish's umbrella stand.
What do you know about this, Cornish?
I don't know anything about it.
Well, that gun belongs to Mr. Cornish.
That's right, Mr. Carter. I've seen it in his desk many times. I recognize that fancy handle.
Say, what are you fellows trying to do? Well, sure, it's my gun. But I haven't seen it for 3 days. Someone stole it out of my desk, Mr. Carter.
Why didn't you report it to the police?
Because I didn't carry a permit for it. I was afraid of getting in trouble.
Cornish, I regret that appearances are against you. I'm afraid I'll have to turn you over to the police.
You won't turn me over to the police?
Well, what happened to the lights?
Cornish, turn them out!
Turn those lights on, somebody!
Here you are, Mr. Carter.
There he goes, Carter. It's Cornish. He's escaping down the hall.
Stop, Cornish. Stop or I'll shoot. You see, Patsy, I was right with Hamill when he was murdered. What I can't figure out was how he was shot when there was no one else in the hall with us.
Don't ask me, Nick.
And here's something else. I heard only one shot fired. But Cornish's gun had 3 empty shells. And to top it all off, here's the bullet that killed Hamill. Coroner gave it to me. Notice how it's all banged up?
Yes, how did that happen?
I wish I knew. Patsy, if I knew the answer to that, I think I'd know the answer to this whole case. Until we find Cornish. Oh, I'll get it.
Hello, Carter?
Yes, this is Nick Carter.
Oh, this is Alan Cornish. I suppose I'm a fool for calling Webb Carter, but I need help. I'm desperate and I can't go to the police. You've got to help me prove I didn't kill Hamill.
Why'd you run away, Cornish?
Because I was scared. Lucky for me you didn't hit me.
Don't worry, Cornish. If I'd really wanted to hit you, I would have. Where are you now?
I'll tell you, but you've got to promise to come alone. If you don't...
The only thing I'll promise you is that I won't do anything till after I've talked to you. Now, what's the address?
1813 Oak Street. Come right over. I'll be waiting for you.
Okay, sit tight. I'll be there.
You mean we'll be there? I'm sick of sitting around here. I'm going with you.
...1813 Oak Street. This is it, Betsy.
Gosh, what a creepy-looking place.
Certainly not very attractive. Well, come on, let's go in.
Maybe he's not here.
Said he'd be here. Wonder if... Well, the door's open.
Should we go in?
We can't keep our date with Cornish if we don't.
Gosh, it's dark in here. Nick, do you suppose it could be a trap?
You never can be quite sure, Patsy. Here's the door. Stand behind me.
Can you see anything in there, Nick?
Wait till I get my flashlight. No. Looks deserted. Oh, come on, let's try another room.
Gee, this place gives me the jitters. It's practically deserted.
Maybe he's in here. Stand back, Patsy. No, nothing in there.
Maybe he got scared after he called you and slipped away.
We'll soon find out. There's another door over there.
Look, Nick. Is that...
Yes. He's hanged himself.
I don't know why we came back to the office again tonight. Cornish is dead. I guess that closes the case.
Patsy, I'm not satisfied. When I talked to him on the phone, he certainly didn't sound like a man who was going to kill himself. When a man wants to prove himself innocent, he doesn't commit suicide. No, Patsy, there's something about that hanging that's bothering me, and I can't lay my finger on it.
You probably figured that was the best way out. To kick over the chair and end it all.
Patsy, remind me to give you a raise.
And what did I do?
I've got it! Look, Patsy, Cornish was a short man.
Well, so what?
Patsy, Cornish couldn't have hanged himself.
Well, why not?
Don't you remember, Patsy? The only furniture in that room was a bed. And Cornish was so short he never could reach that noose from the bed where it was.
Of course, Nick. The bed was on the other side of the room.
Patsy, Cornish was murdered. She eliminates him as a suspect. Probably he was killed by the same man who killed Hamill.
But who, Nick? Who?
I wish I knew.
Hiya, Nick. Hiya, Patsy.
Well, if it isn't the missing link.
Scubby, did you find out anything about that car that nearly ran me down this afternoon?
Oh, you bet, Nick.
Good.
But what a time I've been having. Wait till you hear what I have to tell you.
Well?
I had to get the license commissioner out of bed to get it, but, oh boy, it was worth it. Hey, do you know who that car belongs to? Tom Burdick, Hamill's partner.
Good boy, Scubby. You get his address, too?
Yeah, some deserted neck of the woods out in Long Island. I've got the address here somewhere.
Fine. Come on, Scubby. You and I are going to pay him a visit. You know, Scubby, the more I think of it, the more it looks as if Tom Burdick might be mixed up in this some way.
Well, I hope so, Nick. Otherwise, we're using up a lot of gas in this jalopy of mine for nothing. Hey, have you noticed anything funny, Nick?
You mean that car that's been trailing us for the last few minutes?
That's it. What do you make of it, Nick?
I don't know, Scubby. But I think we'll be finding out quickly enough. They're overtaking us. Better step on it.
Okay, Nick. Here we go. How are we doing?
Not so good, Scubby. They're still gaining on us. Can you give her any more gas?
I'll try. There. They still coming up?
Yes, Scubby. And fast. Duck, hey. Scubby, they're shooting at us.
You're telling me.
Watch it. Here they come.
Well, I've done all I can, Nick. This old bus won't go any faster.
Well, let's try an old trick, Scubby. When they get close to us, slam on your brakes and pull over to the side of the road.
Yeah?
They won't be expecting that. It may throw them completely off balance and spoil their aim.
Okay, Nick, you say when.
Now, pull over.
Okay. Oh, boy. That was a close one. Are you all right, Nick?
Yeah. Well, we won't see them anymore for a while. Get going, Scubby. We gotta make up for lost time.
Well, Nick, I've gotta hand it to you. You have the darndest way of getting into a cellar.
Well, we had to get into Riddick's house somehow. This cellar with its trick entrance from the garage looked like the safest way. Especially with those two vicious-looking dogs posted at both the front and back doors to the house.
Well, they sure were big ones, too. I'd hate to meet one of them. Hey, where do you think this is going to lead us to, Nick?
We should find a stairway going upstairs, unless I'm very much mistaken.
Yeah?
Yeah. Here's one. All right, let's go up. But careful.
All right, Nick, you lead the way. I'm with you.
Here's the door.
I hope it's open. No, darn it, it's locked.
I'll soon fix that. There. All right, Scubby, come on.
Oh, wait.
Someone's coming into the room, Scubby. Get back. We can hear through the crack of the door. I'll leave it open in a little.
Well, Mrs. Burdick, I'm certainly glad you called me up. I'm only too happy to be here at a time like this. After all, we're practically neighbors, aren't we?
Oh, I just had to talk to someone, Mr. Garrick. I'm so worried about Tom and those horrible things that have been happening at the office. What do you make of all this?
Well, I wouldn't worry about it too much, Mrs. Burdick. Tom can take care of himself, if he has to.
What do you mean, Mr. Garrick?
Oh, nothing. But he has been acting rather strangely lately.
Well, that's just it. I'm so worried. I haven't seen or heard from him all day. He's never been so late coming home from the office. Why, it's after 11.
Oh, there's really nothing to worry about, Mrs. Burdick, even in a case like this. Of course, it looks very peculiar for Tom to be missing his way, especially at this particular time.
Mr. Garrick, you don't think Tom had anything to do with all this sort of...
Well, Mrs. Burdick, I like Tom very much. I would hate to think that Tom had anything to do with this murder. Of course, things
are... Well, Scubby, we don't seem to be learning much this way. Might as well go in and let him know we're here.
Sure, Nick.
Good evening, Mr. Garrick.
Why, Mr. Carter, what are you doing here?
I just came along with one of my assistants, Scubby Wilson, to talk to Mr. Burdick. We came in this way because we didn't want to disturb the dogs.
Oh, really? Who are you?
Oh, Mrs. Burdick, this is Mr. Nick Carter. He's in charge of investigating Hamill's death.
Mr. Carter, the detective? Nothing's happened to Tom, has it?
I don't believe so, Mrs. Burdick. I just want to ask him a few questions when he arrives.
Well, maybe that's why Tom hasn't come home. Maybe he's afraid of...
Maybe that's he now.
Wait, I'll go look out the window to see if that's his car.
Carter, I must warn you to be careful. Burdick's a dangerous man.
Tom, Nick Carter's here.
Please, Mrs. Burdick,
Nick
come away from that window.
Nick Carter's here to see you.
You won't do him any good that way, Mrs.
Tom,
Burdick.
Tom, stop it,
you hear me? Please.
Hey, that's his car, Mr. Carter. Look, he's getting away.
Come on, Scubby, let's get after him.
Okay. Wait, I'll go with you, Carter.
Hurry up. I want to know why he runs away when he hears my name.
I hope this car of yours stays on the road, Carter.
Don't worry about it, Mr. Garrick.
Carter, I didn't want to say too much in front of Mrs. Burdick, but we've all been afraid of Burdick.
All right. Scubby, just keep your foot on that throttle and keep after him.
Oh, boy, we sure made that one on two wheels. Nick, I'm pushing this crate as fast as she'll go, but we don't seem to be getting any closer. That car of Burdick's can sure step.
As long as we hang on and don't lose him, I'll be satisfied.
Hey, watch it. We're coming to a railroad crossing.
So I see. Well, maybe we can head him off now. If Burdick tries to beat that limiter to the crossing, he's crazy.
Look, Carter, I think he's going to try to make it.
He can't do it. He'll be killed.
Nick, that nurse that just came out of the operating room is signaling you.
Oh, yes. She wants me to go into Burdick. You wait for me here, Scubby.
Okay, Nick.
Burdick? Burdick, can you hear me?
Yes, Carter. I can hear you. Carter, I'm a dying man.
Yes, I know.
I swear to you, I didn't kill Hamill or Cornish.
Then why did you try to run me down with your car this afternoon?
Carter, I didn't do that. All I know is that for several hours this afternoon, my car was mysteriously missing. I didn't find it again until I started home this evening.
Burdick, why did you run away from your home tonight when your wife told you we were there? And how about the securities we found on you after the wreck?
It wasn't you. It was securities. I took them so that...
Yes, Burdick? Why did you take them?
I took them so I could keep him from stealing them.
Who? Burdick, who? Burdick, who's he?
Carter. Front office. Bottom drawer of desk. Something will lead you to murderer.
Yes, Burdick? Who's the murderer?
He's... Oh.
Burdick. Oh, poor chap. If you'd spoken sooner, you might have lived longer.
Nick. Oh, Nick, I got here as quick as I could. Have you found anything yet?
I think so. Scubby Burdick wasn't lying to me. I found this in the bottom drawer of the desk in the front office here.
A book? Well, is that what Burdick meant?
Just look at that title.
Studies of Various Angles of Bullets in Flight. Well, so what, Nick?
Scubby, that's the way Hamill was killed. It all adds up perfectly. Now I know why I heard only one shot when I found three empty shells in the murder weapon. Three shots were fired, but two of them were fired at a different time from the third.
Well, do you know where the other two bullets are, Nick?
I do. Follow me out in the hall and I'll show you.
Yeah?
You see, Scubby, as soon as I found that book on the flight of bullets, I did a bit of looking around, and I finally found them.
Well, where are they, in the office here?
No, Scubby, in the corridor. Right over there in that dark corner, embedded in the wall beside the elevator shaft, about a half a dozen feet from where Hamill was killed.
Well, what are they doing over there?
Scubby, this was a very ingenious crime. And if you watch carefully, I'll show you just how ingenious it really was. Now, you notice that Cornish's office is the only one facing the corridor leading from the elevator.
Yeah. So what?
Well, in order to shoot someone coming down the hall, the murderer, if he were in any office but Cornish's, would have to step from his office out into this corridor and be seen, right?
Yeah, right.
But our murderer was very clever. I got the answer when I located the book, and when I found these embedded in the wall beside the elevator shaft.
The two missing bullets.
Right.
Well, hey, they're all banged up.
Precisely, just like the murder bullet. And that's what gave me the answer. You see, Scubby,
yeah.
The murderer never left his office. He stood inside the front office, the one around the corner, on the lower leg of the L-shaped corridor, and aimed at that steel pillar built into the wall over there. When the bullet hit the steel face of the pillar, it was deflected into Hamill's lungs. Look here. You see these marks in the face of the pillar here?
Where? Oh, yeah.
Those are the bullet marks.
Oh, well, gosh, Nick, that's fantastic. Hey, are you sure you're right?
Positive. Don't you see, Scubby? That explains the other two shots that were fired. They weren't fired at Hamill, and they weren't fired at the time the murder was committed. They were practice shots used by the murderer to be sure he had the correct angle from which to shoot Hamill.
Gosh, Nick, I've certainly got to hand it to you.
Yes, but we still have to get the murderer.
But how? And who is it, Nick?
I rather think that if we step back in the office and wait, we'll find out soon enough, Scubby.
Well, what do you mean, Nick?
I mean that whoever it is will be in this office within the next few minutes, because after my discoveries, I made a couple of phone calls, and I invited the two remaining partners to meet me here.
Shh. Here comes someone now.
Oh,
how do you do, gentlemen?
Oh, hello, Garrick.
I got your phone call, Carter, and I got here as fast as I could.
Garrick, have you seen this book before?
Studies of various angles of bullets in flight. Why, yes, now that I think of it, I think I have.
Does it belong to you?
No, it doesn't. But I remember that one day when I was with Mr. Nelson, he stopped in front of a bookshop and looked at it. Rather closely, now that I think of it. Yes, I'm sure it was Nelson.
Very interesting. Now tell me, Mr. Garrick, when the murder was committed, are you positive that you and Mr. Nelson were in this office together?
That's right, Mr. Carter.
And you show me exactly where each of you stood at the time the shot was fired.
Well, now let me see. I was here, facing the window, and Nelson was, well, standing right about here by the door.
Mm-hmm. I see. Did you notice in which direction he was facing at the time?
Yes, I remember. This way, facing the corridor.
In other words, the way he was standing, you could see him only in profile.
That's right.
Well, there's no question but that's how it was done, Scubby. The murderer planted himself in this office so that he could establish a strong alibi. He then took the gun from his pocket, unseen by the other person in the room, who could see him only in profile, and then fired it at that steel pillar. Then as he ran into the corridor with the rest, after Hamill was dead, he dropped the gun into the umbrella stand in front of Cornish's office.
Well, Carter, do you mean that Nelson is the one
how
who...
How do you do, gentlemen? Did I hear my name mentioned?
Yes, Nelson, you did. Why did you kill Hamill and Cornish?
Please, Garrick, don't be ridiculous.
Oh, Nelson, does this book look familiar to you?
This book? No, I can't say that it does.
You sure you've never seen this book before?
Now that you mention it, I may have glanced at it in a bookshop at one time or another, but then I look over a lot of books. I like to browse.
I see. Nelson, see how you approve of this story of Hamill's murder.
Yes?
The killer knew of Cornish's criminal record, and he figured he could embezzle some of the firm's money and pin it on an innocent man. Then when he found out that Hamill was becoming suspicious and was having the accounts checked, he became panicky and afraid that it might not work out the way he had planned. So he decided to kill Hamill. Then when he happened to overhear Hamill's conversation with me over the telephone, he hurriedly borrowed Burdick's car without Burdick's knowledge and tried to get rid of me.
That's an interesting way out, Mr. Carter. Have you also a theory as to who the killer is?
I have. By the process of elimination, it has to be either you or Mr. Garrick or an unknown.
And I've already proved that I didn't do it.
It must have been an unknown then, Mr. Carter. I certainly didn't kill Hamill. I had nothing to do with the murder. When the shot was fired, I was right here in this room with Mr. Garrick. He can testify to that.
He has already, Mr. Nelson.
In fact, Mr. Carter, I was standing right here facing the window when the shot was fired.
Oh, no. That's where I was, Mr. Carter. Standing here at the window.
Now, please, Garrick.
Please,
now,
gentlemen, please. You don't have to argue about it. I know who was at the window, and I know who fired the fatal shot. Scubby, take a look at the flyleaf of this book.
Well, what are they, Nick? They look like the scribbles that some guys draw when they have nothing else to do. Oh, doodles, they call them.
Exactly. While I was looking through the various offices, I found some papers with these same doodling marks on them in one of the desks. And these marks were made by the murderer. Garrick, I arrest you
Watch
for the murder...
Watch out, Dickie! He's got a gun!
Stop!
Well, Scubby, pick up the pieces.
Oh, boy.
There's the murderer, Garrick. He's also the man who tried to murder you and me last night in the road to Burdick's home.
Well, I'll be.
You see, Scubby, Burdick has his suspicions about Garrick. That's why we found those securities on him. He took them so that they wouldn't fall into Garrick's hands. He'd suddenly found out that Garrick was an unscrupulous crook. And that was the reason he ran when Mrs. Burdick called him. He saw Garrick at the window and was afraid of him.
Well, Nick, I must say he had me fooled when he said that Nelson was standing at the door of the office here when he was really there himself.
Yes, in telling us who was in this office, our clever murderer just reversed the positions in which he and Mr. Nelson were standing when the murder was committed. But once I saw the marks on that flyleaf, I knew who stood where. And that's why I had Nelson come up here, to force Garrick's hand.
Well, Nick, one way's as good as another as long as you get results. And you always seem to do that.
So you finally decided to come back, did you?
Yes, Patsy, it's all over. Well, I think you can go home now.
Why, Mr. Carter, are you sure you can spare me?
Why not?
You've been so busy on this case all night, Mr. Carter, you may not have noticed that it is now a new day. And a good secretary is always on the job the first thing in the morning. Shall I take a letter, Mr. Carter?
This was another strange experience of Nick Carter, Master Detective, called An Angle on Murder, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Mutilated Bullet. Another of the curious adventures of Nick Carter, which are brought to you by WOR Mutual. And now, Nick, what's next week's story all about?
Well, when this case was first brought to me, it seemed so routine and uninteresting that I practically turned it down.
But it was far from routine once you got into it, wasn't it, Nick?
Yes, indeed. So far from it that I almost got myself bumped off investigating it.
It's really the story of a man who thought he was so much cleverer than Nick that he could outwit him every time.
I don't suppose he got away with it.
No, he found he wasn't really so clever after all. Like practically every criminal I ever met, he gave himself away by being too clever.
Well, sounds like an interesting tale, Nick.
Not only interesting, but downright exciting. But more of that next week. So long, folks.
So long.
And so long to you, Nick and Patsy. In the strange adventure you've just heard, Nick Carter was impersonated by Lon Clark, Patsy by Helen Choate, and Scubby by John Kane. The story was written for Nick Carter by George Gordon. Original music was played by Lew White. The entire production was under the direction of Jock McGregor. Next week, listen to another curious experience of Nick Carter entitled
The Body on the Slab, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Missing Husband.
This story is a copyrighted feature of Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Beginning Wednesday, November 3rd, The Return of Nick Carter, which is produced in the studios of WOR, will be broadcast over most of these stations on Wednesday evenings at 8:30 Eastern Wartime. Remember the new time, Wednesdays at 8:30 Eastern Wartime, beginning Wednesday, November 3rd. This is Mutual.
That does it for Case Closed this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Richard Diamond, Nick Carter, past episodes of this podcast, alongside all the other shows at relicradio.com. There's also a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you enjoy this show, would like to help support it all. Your donations make all of this possible. Thank you as always to those who have, and thank you for joining me today. Talk again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.